Hey there, opera fans. I'm Eric Teague. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I'm primarily a costume designer. You may have seen some of my work in different houses around the U.S., but, fun fact, I'm also a trans man. Ever wondered how alternative identities thrive in the opera world? As someone who makes art for his living, I wanted to explore that question the best way I knew how, by talking to some folks. On this show, I'll speak with other artists who exist under the rainbow umbrella, and talk about life, work, and what makes us shine the brightest. So now I'm wearing a new hat, as your host for Come As You Are, the podcast that goes beyond the curtain with our industry's amazing artists from the LGBTQ+ community and our allies. Think of this as a virtual coffee hour with some fascinating people whose work you've heard or seen in your favorite shows. Whether singers, directors, technicians, or designers, the thing that we share in common is that we all defy the gender expectations often associated with our industry. So grab yourself a cup and join us for a good story. Today on the program, we have another exciting artist to share with you, our listeners. She has made an impact on the opera world not only from the stage, but rather wielding a baton in the pit. She has performed with Opera Columbus, Australian Contemporary Opera Company, Opera Orlando, among many, many others, and currently serves on the Artistic Advisory Council for American Opera Projects. But we, here at the Atlanta Opera, are happy to call her Maestra. Our first conductor featured here at Come As You Are, please welcome Alexis Anyert to the show. Thank you for joining us today, Alexis.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So here at Come As You Are, we like to introduce our identities and orientations up top. For example, I am your friendly neighborhood trans man with he, him pronouns. How about you?
I use she, her pronouns. I am a woman and I am also transgender.
Fantastic. Would you mind telling us a little bit about where and how you grew up?
Yeah, I would love to. I grew up in small town Kentucky, in a small town called Alexandria, which is a city of about 10,000. So it was, I always tell people it's one county over from what is legally Appalachia. So, and our city's motto is where the city meets the country. So on one hand, I could turn and drive into the hills and like the foothills and up and down. I'm really used to some of these winding roads and like where if you drive off the road at all, your car falls down a hill. But on the other hand, I'm also really used to being able to drive up into Cincinnati, which was also relatively close. So with both, it was really nice. It was a really good combination of things, but I always knew that this small town environment was going to be one that while I loved, I knew that I had to grow beyond it in some ways to do the things that I wanted to do. There isn't an opera company in Alexandria, Kentucky.
Sure. So music has been with you since your earliest age, because if I remember correctly, both of your parents are musicians as well.
They are. My earliest memories, so my dad is a drummer, and like a pit drummer in musical theater pits, and my mom would play from the woodwind book. And so my earliest memories, they worked on the Showboat Majestic, which is an old steamboat paddle boat off the Ohio River. And so I would go, and I remember some of my earliest memories are like running my fingers along the black taped down electrical lines to stand lights, and then leaning over this rail for this lofted orchestra pit, and leaning over, and you can feel like the little roll of the waves of the river as you watch this theater down there. And so that was happening. I mean, I was there literally before I can remember. And then simultaneously, I used to take the couch cushions, and I would take them, and I would turn on Fantasia. I would stand on top of the couch cushions, and I would conduct Fantasia. So in a lot of ways, this has been something that really called to me and really has always been a piece of my life, and has always been something that's been fascinating, interesting, and exciting to me. So I feel incredibly privileged to get to stand here today with the Atlanta Opera, which is just an incredible place to be, much more prestigious than my living room on the couch cushion.
Hey, don't discount the living room concert.
I agree. I truly believe that making music is equally valid and equally important just in sharing these spaces. I think that rehearsals, and so much of rehearsals are their own performances, mm-hmm. especially as a conductor, my performance really is the rehearsal room. And by the time that we get to the performance, I'm there as a support and as this piece, but really my role is one of service and one of helping a variety of people, from the singer, the composer, the administrative, the director, figuring out, you know, it's I love about my job that I get to have a foot in every room, but I'm not committed to any of them. And I get to step out of them and walk away and come back and figure out, you know, where do I get to be in this point that kind of is, I don't want to say the center, because I don't want to be self-involved that way, but at the very least, I'm a point of connection between a lot of different aspects of what happens. And I think that that's one of the things I love the very, very most about my job.
That is very parallel to my experience as a designer. I deeply love that sense of interconnected collaboration with multiple departments to create a holistic picture. That's fantastic to hear of it from a more musical side of things.
Well, I always think that, like, the lighting designer and I do really similar jobs.
Yeah. You know,
the lighting designer is putting color out on stage in this very visual way. And my aspect is to figure out some of the structure of our soundscape and figure out how are we going to create our arch as a whole. What are our loudest and softest moments? What are our most vibrant? And our also, on the other end, where are we the least colorful? Where are things the most monochromatic? And I think, you know, music is hard to talk about because we have fewer words for it in some way.
Sure.
So I think it really helps to talk about sound through other aspects of artistry. And you know, we have a better idea of what, if I say I sculpt the sound, that is a more specific verb than you know, other ways that we can talk about music. So I think that it's really helpful that we steal, borrow, and take from the other arts, all the fine arts, just to try to figure out what ways can we do this. And I'm sure the other fine arts are doing the same. I mean, all it takes is looking at statues of like a pianist's hands to see that there's this cross-pollination of artistry that I think is really exciting and powerful. And that's why opera is to me one of the most exciting, because it's a group of a variety of artists who are brought together for a single purpose. And I think that there are not many spaces where you get to have that wide a variety all together all the time. So I think that it's really powerful to be in opera.
You're so right. And speaking of cross-pollination and connectivity, how does your own personal life experience influence your work or the pieces that you take on? Does your advocacy shape your views of which projects to really sink your teeth into?
First, I mean, I think that I don't really believe in music for music's sake. Part of why I'm an opera conductor also is that it's a storytelling-based art. And also, every story can be turned this way. So before talking about as one or cabaret, let's look at standard repertoire. So Tosca is incredible opera by Puccini. If you don't know it, then I hope that you'll have a chance to look it up. But basically, I think that Tosca is this intersection of police, art, and faith. And in those ways, if you are looking for the story that way, instead of just listen to this beautiful Italian opera, then you connect into why is this relevant? Why does this still matter? Obviously, right now, our own culture here in the States is very caught up in the conversation of police, art, and faith. It's this triangle as well. And trying to figure out how do we each belong? Where do we do? How do we interact with each other? What does this look like? How do we move around each other? And what should we be doing in an environment like ours as we're dealing with this? And I think that Tosca can have some very powerful answers to that and do that. you know, I'm doing Rossini's La Scala di Seta, which is this, the Silken Ladder. It's a story about a couple who want to be married, and each night she sends down a silken ladder so that the tenor can come up and they have their, they have sex. And so they go ahead and they have sex. And then, but she's supposed to be married to this other man. And so this whole thing is this like runaround of how to get out of that marriage and how to end up with who she wants to end up with. And for, I think for a lot of people, that just looks like a comedy. But to me, this looks like a conversation on marriage equality. You know, sure. Who's allowed to marry who? And there's who else understands what it feels like to have to pretend to be attracted to someone or pretend to be, you know, to be paired with someone that you're expected to be paired with when you actually are like running around. And this vulnerability and the trust when neither of you can say what you want to say out publicly. So you have to say it in private and then believe that the other person's lies are also in your best interest because you have to do this lectured line. So there's a lot of this standard repertoire that is easy to see through other angles, through other ways, and to say, how can we do this? I mean, Atlanta Opera coming up, you've got Madama Butterfly, which is the story of a 15-year-old child sold into sex work. You know, and of course that gets turned into, look at this great Italian opera and taken away from, this is the story of children in sex work. And that's what it is. That's why Pinkerton is so gross. That's why this is so wrong.
Right.
And it's not that those necessarily get, well, I don't know. They sometimes don't get the attention that they deserve to that actual piece of the story. So for me, in my own life, in my own work, I feel more like I want to be aware of what these are telling. I think the stage is a vehicle for truth and that we're all responsible for what we put up on it. You know, it's, we don't get to be separated from it. Like what I do has no bearing. I mean, the stage is always and has always been a place of significance, and it's our responsibility to make sure that what we as artists put on stage is something that we can stand behind. And I think that's something that you'll definitely see in as one in Cabaret is this, a powerful story about right now.
So speaking of right now, you have multiple intersectionalities in your life and art, and we've just discussed a few of them, but I wanted to know, this is a personal question, which is more challenging, to be a young conductor in this field or to be a young female conductor in this field? Because I feel like both positions are very difficult to occupy in this industry.
They are very difficult to occupy. Being a young conductor, in a lot of ways, it's very scary and very fun at the same time. You have, it's, everything is new, which is really exciting. You know, I'm making a lot of debuts with new companies and doing, you know, and meeting new people, and I'm developing friendships all around the country. And that's something that is really exciting, because it's all new and fresh, but it's also scary because it's like, I hope that nothing explodes. You know, you're not established enough to be guaranteed that things will be okay. And in some ways, I think you never are. But at the same time, obviously, the more connections you have, the more you've got a catalog of work that people have seen and know about, the safer and more secure you can feel as an artist, and the more risks you can take as a result. So, but on the other hand, you can also take a lot of risks being young, because there are places where I can go and try something where it's like, you know, the stakes are low. So I think that there's pros and cons for sure about being a young conductor. As to being a young woman conductor, I definitely think that it is more challenging because there's so much misogyny in our country that just is there. And I feel like we want to say, well, I'm not misogynistic, or I'm not racist, or I'm not transphobic, or I'm not homophobic, but we all are, because it's built into our culture. it's impossible not to be. Lots of women have misogyny about themselves and about other women. And you know, of course, it's even if you're within a group, you know, for me, it's very easy to accidentally find myself having unpacking transphobia still, you know, about myself and about others. It's ingrained. It's really hard. You just can't separate yourself from the culture that you live in my opinion. But with all those aspects, it's the littler things that make it challenging. And I think that it's very easy to question and to worry in a different way as a young woman conductor, because it's very easy to be taken less seriously. Or if you are promoting yourself to be interpreted as pushy or aggressive or things like this. So navigating how to talk about what you do and navigating those aspects is challenging in a way that it's impossible to not be affected by that, and impossible not to be feeling that sense of what is the worth of me, what's the worth of my body, what's the worth of my community, what's the worth of us, and to feel that step into being sometimes, you know, second class. And for me, transitioning, you know, what's interesting is that I had an external amount of male privilege. You know, people saw me away and perceived me away and treated me a different way. I didn't affect me internally. You know, when people say that you're socialized male, I just don't think that's really true. I think that you're socialized trans, which is to say that you're experiencing things as a girl in the boys' locker room, sure. Which is to say that you're experiencing all the misogyny that there is, and you carry that with you. But you also are in some ways safe for parts of high school and moments like that, or can be if you're not out, because you can, while you're like observing it and taking it in about yourself emotionally and dealing with that, it doesn't necessarily get directed at you with a point. So it's the interesting question of you know, what's the difference between being behind closed doors where people think they're safe to say whatever they want versus it actually being pointed and directed directly at you. So it's a real challenge, you know, to navigate both of those things and just deal with that sort of environment, you know, and that sort of a place where you can just make these derogatory remarks towards women and just tear us down for oftentimes just for being women. And that's it. Like, that's the only reason.
Yeah. Existing is not an invitation for criticism.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
I firmly believe that. And I have a very interesting position in that my physical form, I can often look like a safe space for a dude bro to make a bad comment about a woman. But the surprise is real when a smart reply comes out of my face about how inappropriate that was, or I bet he doesn't speak to his mother like that, or bet he really wouldn't like it if somebody talked to his girlfriend like that. So
yeah,
it's the sense of urgency for at least trying to chip away at the iceberg of misogyny is something that I feel very keenly, because if you look like the wolf, you should start teaching the wolves how to be better wolves, you know?
I like it.
As many of our listeners know, the Atlanta Opera is producing a version of As One this season. Shocker, spoiler alert, we're here. We're opening June 9th at Pullman Yard, so please come out and see it. We have the pleasure of working with you, Alexis, as a colleague, and I'm so excited about it. While this is a new production for us here, it's one of many productions that you have conducted. So as you shape a new version, do you start from a clean slate? Does every version have a different flavor? How do you find yourself flexing and growing with a new production when you have all of this past experience banked up?
Of course. So this is number 7 for me. And I have 2 more this year, so I'll be at 9 by the end of the year.
Wow.
which puts me in second place behind Blythe, who's singing one of our Hannahs this time. And for me, I feel like so much of opera conducting is saying, this could be this way. You know, in all my preparation, I'm like, here's nine ways this could be said. You know, here's all these different ways. And so in some ways, it's like, I know now the pitfalls where it's like, if you don't conduct a 2/4 bar right here, then no one knows where they are. You know, it's you. So you find those technical aspects where it's like, this has to happen this way or else people will be lost. But then you also have the space again, every time you come back, where you're like, who is Hannah going to be? You know, and it's an incredible amount of variety. Is Hannah going to be, how sensitive is she? How fiery is she? How, you know, reflective? Is she sad? Is she happy? What does she think about this? How is this memory affecting her? And then because it's human and humans are coming into it and doing this, immediately she's a different person. So, you know, I've done it 6 times with 6 different Hannahs. And Atlanta's Hannah is fantastic. I mean, this is a really special. She is both joyful and serious in some ways. This Hannah is, sometimes she's like really kid-like. This Hannah's more put together in those ways. She's more reflective on what's happening and what's going on. And she's really connected into these moments of joy. But she also has these moments of hardship that resonate through them. And at the same time, this Hannah is also able to let go of the past easier than some others. You know, she's this Hannah is really working through and releasing. And this is a process of releasing past hurts in this production, which just changes everything, you know, because so often Hannah is going through it, then you don't have time to reflect on how it hurt. You know, there's like, it's built in a little bit, but this is a much more reflective, thoughtful, healing Hannah than others. And I think that's really powerful and really exciting. But it you know, she's always different. This is a girl's coming of age story, and you know, the teams that find her and put her together and become her always do it differently. And I think that's one of the real powers of this show.
In your previous experience with the show, how have audiences reacted? Have there ever been any surprise reactions that were just wildly out of the realm of what you ever thought you'd get back?
No, I mean, mostly people react very positively, you know, at least speaking to me, people like the show. Some people say it changes their perspective entirely, where they had no idea about trans issues at all. And they'll be like, I feel like I woke up and I just didn't know anything. This, a very lovely experience I had recently with this woman who was so touched. She came twice and made me this bracelet. And also the next time I go back to the city to conduct again, we're meeting again.
Oh, wow.
So it was one of these really, you know, it's so that was a really powerful reaction to it. But lots of people have these moments of, you know, either I had no idea or this really helped me become aware. This changed how I'm thinking, this, you know, this. So I think that there's a lot of education power in this. And then for people who are trans, it's often, you know, I didn't think I would get to see myself on stage.
Yeah.
So, and you know, there has in the past been concern about S1 because it's written with 2 cisgender singers in mind performing it. So that always becomes this piece of controversy, but Atlanta has smartly avoided this entirely with the casting of Lucia Lucas, who is already just brilliant. And so there is this really special Hannah, in that normally there is, you know, a male aspect and a female aspect of Hannah on stage. And the real Hannah is never really on stage, in my opinion, in the show. It's just these aspects and pieces of her that are telling the story about who she is. But this time we have women telling Hannah's story. And I really do think that more than the trans story, as one is a woman's coming of age story. And that the whole, I know that like the trans narrative around it is the part that people talk about the very most, but I do think that the feminist power of just an American girl growing up, which we never see.
That's true.
We never see is incredibly powerful, and that I want it to be a space where it's not like you're watching someone else. You're not watching the other. This is a space where I hope that women are watching themselves. And, you know, trans women, we look up to lots of cis women. And cis women, I hope, feel safe and secure to look up to us too. And I hope that you can see yourself in Hannah. And yeah, because she's there. But I would hope that you would not cut yourself off from that experience just because of an adjective like trans.
Sure. Sure. As we've talked a lot about in this conversation, this show is a story of finding yourself. And part of that is finding yourself through this gender transition. And while the character's experience is not universal, the experience certainly does echo many people's lives and parts that are very relatable. That said, there's so much more life to come after the medical or social transition. Do you find that transition-centered narratives only get half of the story?
Well, I think that for, I mean, yes, they do. They do. But I think that for as one, part of the power of this is that she starts hormones like half of the way through the show, which is kind of nice, so that we have, it's not all just like the ending moment isn't, I took a pill.
Right.
Or, you know, I had a shot, or whichever way, you know, there are many ways.
Sure.
But anyway, because of this, I think that what makes Hannah so special, and what I think makes Hannah as significant as a Tosca or a Violetta or any of the other incredible women of opera, is that she has this moment when she goes to Norway. And I think that Norway is a true expression of individuality, because in a lot of the show, Hannah isn't every woman. You know, she embodies ideas that anyone can experience and everyone can have. And beginning in this scene in Christmas, she becomes more specific. And now we're not experiencing Hannah the every woman, but we're experiencing Hannah is Hannah. And by Norway, you know, she even says, where else? And it's funny because the answer is anywhere else. You know, there's no reason for her to go to Norway at all.
Sure.
But it is such an act of individuality, such an act of her own character and of just Hannah, which takes her away from being a trans archetype and takes her into being Hannah. And I think that that is really powerful in this show and helps to bridge that gap. I mean, it's true that, like, it still ends, though, with this, and then I go home, you know, as I've come out and I've done this process. And, of course, life keeps going. What's weird about the trans experience and even the word coming out is that you come out once, but then a lot of us, you know, as you go through transition and as, you know, it just becomes a piece of your medical history.
Yeah.
And then in a way you're back in. I mean, I don't know what that, I don't even think that in the closet's a right word for that, because it's like a whole separate kind of thing. You know, one is I'm trying to deny a piece of myself, and the other is it's just none of your business.
Yeah.
You know, it's two radically different experiences where you don't know that I'm trans, and it's not my, you know, the first time, I had to announce it, you know, and say, here I am, this is me. And, you know, there's been a mistake here. Right. But for me, you know, it's the same as if I was born without a hand, I would have a prosthetic. I was born without a uterus, and my medical team, which is quite involved, got me a prosthetic. And that's really it. So as far as I'm concerned, anything beyond that is just not anyone's business. And you know, we'll develop more and more medical technology also to make this, you know, an easier and easier thing. People, I think that this degree of separation where it's like, you can only be this way or you can only be that way, it's just not real. You know, it's just not real at all.
Well, I am personally honored to work on this piece centering a trans experience with other trans people. I don't think that people can really grasp how important that is. And you were talking about sort of post-transition assimilation into a space that is, you don't feel like it's branded on your forehead or something that you have to bring up all the time, because you really don't. But it's so important to have visibility out there, because I did not have that as a young person. And if I could see someone in a field that I really loved living their best life as an artist that also just happens to be trans at the same time, that would have blown my mind and been an amazing thing as a young person. So I'm very happy that we're not only doing this show, because yes, the piece itself is important, but we're doing it together. And I feel like that's almost the more important part of it.
I do feel like it's really powerful. And I think that, you know, we have this interesting intersectional moment where of time, you know, because, you know, trans lives, trans identities have never been recognized as much as they are right now.
Yeah.
And even the word trans, you know, we're like, well, we can't know about people in the past because they wouldn't have used that word. And I'm like, because no one gave them a word.
Yeah.
You know, and even the word trans to me, it's not the best word I've ever heard, you know, but it's fine. It's an adjective that broadly works. You know, where does the word transgender apply? I think that it applies in, I'm happy for it to be in a medical setting or a legal setting, which is a place to protect my body or my rights. You know, that's why we need a word, is for protection.
Yeah.
The other reason that you need the word is to find community, especially in this exact moment where we are divided, you know, where we can be divided out and where people need to look for each other. So I always write transgender conductor, and I put that adjective in that noun together every time, transgender conductor. And I do that so that, because that's what I Googled, you know, when I was coming out. And sure. So I try to be findable. And now when every now and again, I get high school students or college students or people who write to me and who say, I didn't know that there was anyone. I didn't know that there was anyone that and this existed. And it was challenging. I mean, I thought my career was over when I came out. I thought that was it. So I feel really privileged. I'm aware that S1 has given me like a launch pad in a way. I've hit this special timing where I don't know if I would have the opportunity to work in standard repertoire and to be an opera if every opera company in America wasn't currently learning about trans lives through S1. And I think that that's part of the real power here, is that every company that does S1, the communities that surround them, the companies themselves, all of this, get a deeper understanding around trans issues. So even if I didn't conduct S1 at the company, but they've done it, my safety at that company and support at that company operates on a different level just because they've gone through this experience and this piece. So I'm very grateful that, you know, what is that combination of things that made it possible for someone to do this now? Well, I graduated and then S1 was the second piece that I did. Wow. And so I think because of that, I was young enough to not be crushed yet, and at the exact right moment to grab onto this change in our industry. And I hope that through this, I can help make it easier for other people to not need a perfect storm to have a career. You shouldn't have to have a perfect storm to get to work. It shouldn't have to be something that chance-based. There should be, you know, it should be possible. And so I hope that there are more and more people out there who are working. And, you know, if you are trans in music and you want to learn to conduct, please send me. You can find me at my website, alexandrainyard.com. And I'm happy to help however I can, because I do feel a sense of obligation, because there's enough going against us. And that's where these things, these community aspects, will it be this way forever? No. Will it be this way in my entire lifetime? Yes. You know, this will be how my life is, where it's, will you be a trans activist? I will be. If I lived 400 years, maybe I wouldn't have to be. But certainly the next 100, well, not that I'll live 100 more years, but as long as it goes, we're going to, you know, you just have to keep doing this. And that gives a chance that however many generations down, people won't have to.
Well, thank you so, so much for being with us today on the program. I'm so happy to be working together on this piece, and I look forward to putting it all together in just a few very busy days.
Thank you. I'm off to run to rehearsal now for the piece, so I enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you so much for having me on.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. If you would like to hear Alexis's work live here in Atlanta, tickets are now on sale for As One, so please go to atlantaopera.com and grab your tickets today. There are only 2 performances, so please don't wait. Additionally, you can listen to Alexis's work online and check out her sweet banjo album, Witness, on all the major platforms. If you would like to see some of my work as well, you can certainly come see the show, or you can check out my website, ericteaguedesign.com, and Opergeist on Etsy and Instagram. A huge thanks goes out to the team at the Atlanta Opera for making this podcast possible. And if you have enjoyed our show today, please don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and like and subscribe everywhere else fine podcasts are downloaded. And as always, y'all means all. So come as you are, and your spotlight is waiting.